Inspiring conversations for the modern man. The Evolving Man Podcast.
All right, I'm here with a man named Steph Sifandos. Steph, did I pronounce that properly?
You did pretty good.
I did pretty good. Yeah. Good. Great, man. It's awesome to have you on the show. I've seen you in the field and wanted to have a conversation with you and get to know you and get to know what it is that you do. And so let's do it, man. Let's get to know each other. Give me, the elevator pitch. Who are you and what do you do?
Oh, man, what do I do? What don't I do sometimes? That's how I feel anyway. Well, my background is in behavioral science and psychology, social psychology, and I'm trauma-informed. And I suppose I geek out on really understanding what's going on here in this organism, this head of ours, but also in the entirety of our constitution, right? And, maximizing our human potential, what does that look like? What does that feel like? And I experiment a lot with myself in terms of not only thinking and feeling through the world, but also interacting with this world. So for me, if I were to give you that maybe a little longer than an elevator pitch, I'm immersed in helping people just realize who they are and what they're capable of. And everyone has their own unique spark of expression. But for me, it's clearing the clutter of the past. I see so many people, including myself, that have been sort of held back in life by what their past experiences have been. Maybe it's trauma, maybe it's difficult experiences, maybe it's a belief system that has limited them in really being themselves. And as a result of that, there's this compensation that takes place, these compensatory strategies that aren't really real. And so I noticed there's a heap of unreal people just moving through the world, interacting with each other in almost false ways, just wearing masks because they're so scared of themselves. They're so scared to experience life fully. And I was very much that person and can sometimes still slipstream into that. I can still sometimes today put that mask on because I'm feeling insecure or I'm not feeling myself or I'm feeling disconnected or I'm just not happy or I'm overwhelmed or whatever it is, right? And I'll go back into these contracted strategies. And what I find is that so many people, they stay in those contracted strategies and that becomes their persona and their identity. Mm-hmm. And I think that just creates more distance. And I think we see that in the world today, right? Like when we really peel back what's happening, and not to turn this into a political conversation, but we're seeing people that are leading large organizations and large groups of people that fundamentally haven't dealt with their pain. And they're reactive and they're fearful and they're in a sympathetic nervous system response and they're making decisions and we are making decisions from that place. So a big part of what I do in the world is helping people not make decisions from that place. And in order to do that, it's about closing loops of trauma. It's about applying healing to the places that are really hurt somatically, through the body particularly, and really helping the body heal and feel safe enough to explore what hasn't been explored before that is generally just numbed and numbed and numbed and avoided. And so in short-ish, that's sort of what I do in the world and that's what I'm passionate about, is really helping people through, transcend older versions of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, man. That's a really great synopsis of what you do. Yeah, just to rewind sort of towards the beginning, the concept here is that, a lot of us don't know it, but the way that we are now is influenced by the past and we've become identified with it. Mm. So, I may have some harder edges. I do have some harder edges. I can be really stompy and I can get sharp and intolerant with my partner and my friends when I'm stressed. And I become identified with, like, I am this way and it's how I have to be. My mind is very attached to that way of being. It's my solution. I'm stressed. There's a lot going on. And so I'm getting things done as fast as I can. And you need to get out of my way. That's kind of like what I do when I'm stressed, right? And when I'm in my most unconscious state and I'm when that gets brought to me, like, hey, this is how you're showing up. This is like hurtful to me. My wife essentially says to me, you're stomping all over me. My unconscious response is like, you're criticizing who I am, right? And so I'm sharing this because I think this is a very normal process for people. Is like, we become very identified with the way that we are. It becomes a part of who we are. And anytime we're challenged to look at, not even change, but just like, hey, are you willing to look at this thing that you're doing in your life? Are you willing to look at the way that you show up, the way that you maybe overreacted over here, you spazzed, or the way that you lost control of your anger over here, or the way that you were really intolerant and judgmental or something, you know, are you willing to look at that? It becomes, you're attacking who I am. Because that we have identified that as who we are. And so just to sort of like illustrate the pulling apart of this phenomenon, you're saying we need to be able to get some distance from the way that we're behaving, the way that we're operating in the world, and realize that much of that is conditioned, and that it very well could be conditioned from childhood, from trauma responses, and from living, growing up in the world that we grew up in. And so we have to start to disidentify with some of that stuff and realize like, oh, there's actually 1,000 ways to react to a situation and to react in an environment. And you're reacting one particular way and you're sure that's the right way. Now, why is that?
Yeah.
You know, like you're running a program. You're not running like all the possibilities and then weighing them all equally. You're running a very particular program. I think that's important for people to see.
For sure, man. And you know, your depiction of how you can be is very, very similar to how I can be. If I'm stressed and overwhelmed, I'm projecting, I'm taking it out on others, I'm agitated, I'm short, I'm abrasive, I'm passive aggressive, sarcastic aggressive, like in the more extremes, right? Like that's how I am. And that's how I deal with the stress, is I go deeply into doing mode and it's all about the accomplishment, because that gives me the sense of gratification and validation that I need to feel better about myself, because essentially I'm not dealing with the uncomfortable feelings that are arising as a result of putting too much pressure on myself. And I'm putting the pressure on myself because it's a familiar pattern. And I think if I put more things on my plate and more pressure on myself, that dad will love me a little more. And that's the unconscious projection, right, at some level. And you're absolutely right from my perspective, is that we choose one way. And one of the reasons is that we choose one way is because it becomes a physiological habit, right? And it becomes an access point that's just quick to go to. It's worked in the past, it will work again. Yeah, it's caused some issues, but it's worked, right? Like here's the goal. We want to get to that goal, as you know, and the masculine wants to get there as efficiently as and as effectively as possible, direct, linear fashion, and we're going to do whatever it takes. And when it becomes a habit, it becomes easily accessible, it becomes familiar, but more importantly, it becomes safe. And now we feel safe in the chaos. And that's the fucking interesting thing, is that we feel safe in the chaos. And I thrive in chaos, and at the same time, I dislike it so much. Yet there's an addiction there. There is a physiological addiction to that. And so a lot of my own work has been really trying to break that, doing my best to break that pattern. Look at the potentiality. I look at all the potential that's there, including the mirror that is my partner and my friends and the people in my immediate environment, you know, my clients, people that I just associate with, and how they're mirroring back to me a different way of being. And whether I choose to see it or not, you know, really comes to fundamentally how safe I feel in my nervous system to be able to receive new information. And when I say safe, I'm not talking about, oh, I'm in a, you know, I'm in a war zone and I don't feel safe. I'm talking about A, familiarity, and B, safe enough to explore the unknown, because the familiar is so known. There's a certainty there, and we fundamentally don't like certainty. You know, we look at how we've evolved. Uncertain times and uncertain situations have often proven to be deadly, you know, back in hundreds of thousands of years ago, millions of years ago. Mm-hmm. So there's something within us that still is wants to move away from uncertainty, and a big part of my practice has been deepening certainty, deepening my comfort and my level of comfortability with uncertainty. It's been something that I've been, you know, been practicing for years, and it takes a minute sometimes.
Right. So practicing being in the unknown, practicing trying new things, running new patterns, trying on a new program.
Yep. I'll do that deliberately. Like even something interesting, like we were before here, we were saying, oh, this isn't working. Try Chrome, try Safari, you're in Brave and all of that.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
Well, let me just run a new operating system. So let me get off Chrome. Chrome's not working. Let me jump on Brave or whatever it may be. Let me download Brave. Let me work that out. And there's a level of unknown there. Like how long is it going to take to download? Is it going to work well? Are they going to spy on me? Like who is they? Like all of that. But let's just immerse in the unknown. That's a simple example, right? Like taking a new route or route to work every day. Like that's some unknown as well that is relatively safe for most people.
So there's trying new things. There's stepping into the unknown. You know, for the client that I was working with this morning, trying new things, stepping into the unknown is sitting down with his wife and eye gazing with her. And just having an emotional clearing and telling her what's going on in his mind, what's going on in his emotional body. That's very confronting for him because he is willing to admit with me, you know, emotional intimacy is scary for me. Mm. I've been betrayed so many times. I've been hurt so many times. And so that's a stretch for me. So there's the trying new things. How can a person bring a level of safety, like you're saying, to open up that possibility? You know, if it doesn't feel safe enough, you're just going to default back, right? And you know, you've seen that, I've seen that. You certainly see it in group work, group therapy, men's groups, where like, you know, we're bringing a certain kind of amount of fire to a guy, and he goes shut down. You know, we're trying to help him, we're bringing him love, like we're giving him energy that's loving, but it might be a little bit challenging, and click, you know, a response goes off and his eyes are almost rolling into the back of his head. You know, I've seen that so many times. So we're in new territory for him, but it's also triggering, you know, old territory. How do you create a level of safety where the person or yourself feels comfortable moving into that new territory?
Yeah. I mean, simply put, there's probably only quote unquote one way to do that. And then there's from that one way, there's infinite ways and methodologies and practices and techniques that one can use, but essentially it's self-regulation. It's regulating your nervous system. Now, the interesting thing is that one of the ways that can be enhanced, and I'll give you some tools, I'll provide some examples in a moment, but one of the ways that can be enhanced is in the presence of safe, compassionate, loving individuals. Groups or an individual will work both well. And so with that individual that hasn't experienced safety before, that has experienced volatility and uncertainty in their family dynamic perhaps, or they were bullied at school, or they didn't know what they were going to expect when they came home because mom or dad were an alcoholic or whatever it may be, right? Is if they're able to share some of their secrets, their unknown with other people, and that can be received in a compassionate, empathetic, loving, understanding way, that is applying healing to those parts of that individual that are wounded. Right. And that individual is practicing to protect in their coping strategies in the way that they are in the world, which may push people away or may be aggressive or may hide from the world or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And so then in that presence, they get a real life example of, oh, it can be different. And that self-regulation of the nervous system opens up possibility. That's the, you know, you can bring the man, we can bring the man the fire, we can bring him the love, we can give him all those things that he never got, including maybe the release and the activation of, I have to let this anger go. And it's safe enough. Like the environment is safe. Like it's all good. Our intentions are all there. But if he can't receive because his nervous system's not regulated, he's starting to disassociate, then we've got nothing. Like we can give him all the wisdom in the world. It's just not going to penetrate, right? Mm-hmm. And so that self-regulation becomes imperative. What does that look like? That looks like essentially moving out of sympathetic into parasympathetic. That looks like self-soothing practices, you know, hand on heart, hand on belly, the, you know, gentle touch on the nurturance canal can send information through the vagus nerve into the brain to let one know that they're safe. Mm-hmm. Heavy blanket, walking, exercise, drinking water, cold showers, you know, hot, cold therapy, being in nature, grounding. There are, you know, so many more techniques that one can do, you know, leveraging grounding resources and somatic resources and creative resources, you know, reflective journaling, like thinking and being introspective. The double-edged sword with that is that if people are accustomed to living in a very highly charged, hypervigilant environment, being in a calmer environment can actually feel really dangerous because it's so unfamiliar, it doesn't feel safe. And so that you know, in neuroscience and in trauma therapy, we look at titrating and pendulating. You know, slow is smooth, smooth is fast, and we'll oscillate. We'll take to the edge and we'll come back. Like if you are exploring something that's really difficult within you, maybe it's just simple talk therapy. And you're talking about, I don't necessarily always suggest that because sometimes you can just re-traumatize the individual and relive it. But let's just say you're talking about something that's really uncomfortable. Okay, get there to the edge, come back, hand on heart, hand on belly, just getting some breath technique that's going to be calming. And that's the pendulation. The titration is slowly amping up. And so you take to the edge and you're expanding your window of tolerance, you know, slowly over lengthened periods of time. And that's a good way to do it. That's a healthy way to do it. Yes, we can flood the system. Flooding is a real technique. And it can be super effective for people. However, it can also be really dangerous. And so that titration and pendulation is a really powerful way to self-regulate. And when a person begins to self-regulate, like from my own experience, when I started to be able to take myself to a really uncomfortable place internally, mentally, and emotionally, and then say, whoa, this is too much, let me come back. And I was able to do that myself. Man, the confidence that it gave me confidence to go a little deeper because I know I could pull myself out of that if it's too much, right? And that gave me permission to explore, and it helped me relax a little more and feel safe in, oh, this is cool to be in this state of relaxation. I don't have to be hyper-vigilant all the time. And that takes time to do that, but it's deeply, deeply rewarding and deeply liberating.
Uh-huh. Yeah, beautiful, man. Yeah, and it is, so it's a practice. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep leaning in and keep practicing. And, you know, the whole time you're talking here, I'm like fitting in what you're saying into some of the work that I've seen done in men's circles. And, you know, we say it's not therapy, but it's therapeutic, right? And, you know, so for the listeners, like I want you to hear Steph describing this and not imagining this only happening in a appointment with a somatic therapist or someone where you're paying, you know, $100 to $300 for a session. This can happen on your own in a breathwork session, right? It can happen with your romantic partner. It can happen in a group, you know, like this. The men's work that I do is affordable, $100 a month, $25 a meeting for guys. And we're doing exactly what you're talking about, right? Yep. Where, you know, when we're doing it well, we're going to the edge together of what's uncomfortable. We're self-soothing as well as giving each other some love and care that each man needs and recognition. And we're doing it together. Yep. We're going to the edge and then we're coming back. And we're like, oh, we made it. And we're still here together. I've got your back. You've got mine. And like, there's just something so beautiful about that, right? Like,
yeah,
I've been to many weekend workshops that are big. And they're, a weekend workshop is like a flood, right? And they're big. There's a lot that can happen in 2 days or 5 days or whatever it is, right? And I've had my life change from those things, but there's no match for the consistent effort of, you know, like a weekly meeting or just showing up, even if it's not like a group, just showing up constantly and doing this work on a regular basis to retrain your nervous system and to do this work, right? So yeah, my point is basically this can happen anywhere. And I love how you're generalizing this into, you know, how can people do this work themselves or do this work with other people rather than like my method is, and it's very specific to me, you know, like you're generalizing all methods and what creates healing for all people.
Yeah.
And I think that's very, very useful.
Yeah. And I agree with you, man. Like, you know, I'm here in Austin as well, in Texas, you know, running men's activations and larger groups with my wife as well. It's co-ed and so forth. And you're absolutely right. There's so much that can transpire in a group setting, and you can be a group of friends that get together, that make a commitment to get together and be honest and be real with each other once a week or once a month. And it could be four of you, and that's your commitment. And in that mirroring and in that reflection, you know, you can get creative. You can do a book, quote unquote, book club, and it can be like a very tangible, experiential book that you're reading that you're then practicing things together and then coming back and sharing your experiences with that and mirroring to each other, or you're bringing your pain or your issue and you know, you had a breakup this month, or how can your brothers or how can your friends support you? Like, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be a paid experience or event, and it can be. And we both know that when you are led by an experienced facilitator slash coach slash someone that has depth of experience, wisdom, and knowledge in the field of psychology or social psychology, or behavior and trauma and all of that, if they are an aligned practitioner and they're healthy in their own constitution, they're doing and have done depth of their work, you're going to have a profound experience, right? Mm-hmm. So there's value there for all of us, and it can be quote unquote paid and it can be unpaid, but that there should be no excuse that people do not take responsibility, in my perspective, for their own inner sanctum, for their own mental, emotional, spiritual health, and physical health. Like, there's no reason for that, that no one can do that. Like, mm-hmm. We have access to that, all of us.
Yeah. You need to get into the driver's seat, right?
Yeah.
I've known so many people who, like, in a way, it's like we don't realize that we're adults and we're waiting for the healing to just be dropped into our laps, or the change to be dropped into our laps. And really what we need to do is acknowledge 100% responsibility for everything that's happening in our lives, including the past that we're carrying with us, because it's in us, you know. Yeah. And like, the only person who's going to make any modification to that, the result of that in our bodies, is us. Mm. Right. And we need to step into it.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's this other piece around, like, you know, again, I was talking to a guy this morning, and this concept of always chasing the next system or degree or personal growth workshop came to light, you know, and how easy it is to avoid the very simple, biggest issues, you know, that need to be faced, you know, like, particular guy I was talking to this morning has done a lot in his life. He's created so much. He's done so much in business, and he's done a ton of therapy, a ton of personal growth. Mm. And the thing that's right in front of him with his wife, his fear of intimacy, hasn't really been practiced or addressed. Mm. Right. And I said to him, like, you can spend $10,000 on coaches every month for the rest of your life and keep avoiding this thing, but this might be your biggest thing. And it costs nothing for you to work on, right? And so, that's my message to people out there who are like, I love learning. I love going to workshops and getting this technique and that technique. But so much of the simplest healing that's possible is just you facing yourself and your own discomfort. And that might be you laying on the floor in your living room doing a breathwork session. It may be you sitting in a men's group, doing the things that we do, right? You know, I have a good friend who, you know, he's a high level coach, charges so much for his coaching. It's amazing. And he helps so many people. And when I met him, his fear of closeness with other, people was so strong that he was ready to finally engage that. And we did really deep work with breath work and circles. And I watched him transform I watched his heart open up. Mm. And, for me, it was like a really, amazing opportunity to see how, like, yeah, people can be so successful in their lives. They can be fantastic therapists and coaches, you know, and still miss some of this core work that needs to be done, you know. And one of my favorite moments with him was where he was in a group with us, and he had admitted that, like, he was afraid to be seen and to be, like, intimately seen and then rejected for who he is, because he had been bullied as a child by his siblings and told that, like, severely bullied, told that he should kill himself. And he brought up that pain, and the instinct was to close in, right? And he was encouraged to stay open. And we laid him down on the ground as he was crying and breathing heavy. And we all sat around him in a circle and looked down at him. And the guy that we were working with facilitating just said, keep breathing and keep your eyes open and just look around at all these people. And we had our hands on him, just regulating.
Diffuse shame, yeah.
Yeah. And it was, I like watched his programming start to fall away and to break, right? And for him to see like, no, these, we're not going anywhere. And we see you in your deep pain and we're not judging you. We're with you. We empathize with you. You're safe, you know? Mm. And so that work gets done in 1,000 different ways. But I hear you. It's about, you know, a safe space, about going to the edge with other people, ideally. Mm. But you can go there by yourself.
Yeah.
And then coming back and building your own resiliency. You know, this is one of the reasons why I'm a fan of psychedelics as well, because it creates, like, for me, it's like when it's intense, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to die. I think I'm going to die. And breathing through that moment of discomfort and just coming to a place where I'm able to self-regulate, self-soothe, create safety in my mind. Mm. Every time I come through that to the other side, I'm stronger, I'm more balanced, I'm more grounded. The healing is sort of doing its thing.
Well, you learn something about yourself as well.
Yeah.
You know, you learn something deeper about yourself. And often we can very quickly, to your point earlier, we can very quickly replace coaching and courses and deep dive immersives with, you know, the success that we generate in the outside world, particularly for men. You know, if it's not the next company they're building, it's the next coach that they're hiring. And the simple thing that they need to do, that we need to do, is just sit with ourselves, literally. Just sit with ourselves in stillness and silence and be in our own sense of self and just get curious. And we don't do that because it's very confronting, because when we sit with ourselves long enough, or we remain with ourselves long enough without external distraction and external validation, the layers start peeling off, mm-hmm. right? And I heard an interesting story once, and I'll give the abbreviated version. God in all his glory was sitting contemplating where to place the secrets of the cosmos, right? And contemplating for eons and eons and eons. And then one moment, God realized, oh, if I place these secrets in stillness, silence, and solitude, that is where humankind won't traverse. They won't go there because they fear that. And if they do go there, it will be a secret or a wisdom well earned. And, you know, we all know that something well earned is carries greater value, right, and greater appreciation. And so the thing that we often just need to do, which is just be in our own space, and we're never truly alone, right, but just be in our own space, we avoid like the plague, because there's so much fear of seeing our true selves. And then when we do that, because we're relational beings, and we do that in depth of earnesty and honesty with others, again, just super, super confronting. Uh-huh. Words needn't be said, but that's the thing that we avoid the most.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the uncomfortable silence. I used to run I didn't run the treatment center. I was a part of the START team that created a treatment center for young men in Alberta, Canada, drug addiction treatment. And it was a camp out in the wilderness, and we had 90 days with guys. And luckily at that time it was government funded. So we just like, any guys could go if they applied. And we'd have 10 clients at a time and like 10 staff at a time. It was amazing staff to client ratio set up. But we would have guys come in and we would have lots of time to ask them about like, what is your deepest fear, you know? And what we did there was essentially what you're talking about, where we challenged guys to lean into their discomfort and start to get comfortable doing that in a way. It's, you know, be comfortable with discomfort is one of the things that we would say to these guys often. Mm-hmm. And not from a masochistic place, you know, just like go out and stand in the rain just to feel pain.
Sure.
But to lean into your edges. Mm. And so the guys who told us like, hey, I'm terrified of being alone, we would, you know, edge them towards like, hey, maybe your mission in this treatment is to spend 48 hours in the woods alone. Mm. And within a tiny circle, not leaving that circle, sitting there meditating, just being alone with yourself. And if you want to add like a little bonus onto that, don't eat the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, no way. Like they just could not conceptualize it. And sure enough, we would work with, you know, stepping into that a little bit, go do an hour, you know, see how it feels, debrief, talk about how, you know, how did you self-soothe? Like, what happened? What discomfort came up? How did you face that? Oh, how did you get through that? And sure enough, at the end, like most of these guys were going on a mission to do that. And they would do it at the end of like a 3-day hike or something, just to even push themselves further, you know? So it was amazing to see how guys could actually lean into that if they just took one step at a time with some guidance. And being alone, this is a huge one, especially in our current times. Like, there's just stimulation everywhere, you know, even for guys like you and me. Like, where you're building something and you're an entrepreneur and you've got, you know, building family, like you could just be stimulated forever, right? But yep. That, you know, that's why we have Vipassanas, that's why we have dark rooms, you know. We still have space in the world to go out and be absolutely alone in the woods. Yeah. And it's a worthy pursuit because you face that little demon that you're not going to face otherwise.
I hear you, man. I hear you. There's a great deal to be said for taking ourselves through our own rites of passage and also being taken through rites of passage. There's a reason why that has been prevalent in our world for thousands of years. Particularly for men to have a very distinct, deliberate rite of passage or multiple throughout their lives that take them from one way of being into another way of being, which is often the unknown, right? And the mystery. Mm-hmm. And that often is accompanied by being in nature, facing some deep, visceral, mental and emotional and physical challenges. And then coming through that, I'm obviously giving the very short synopsis of what that looks like, of the structure, but coming through that and then being greeted by men that we revere and respect, and that's mutual, and being witnessed in that rebirth, so to speak, right? But fortunately or unfortunately, it doesn't come without some level of, you know, hardship, challenge, pain, etc. And it doesn't have to be grotesque, and it doesn't have to be sadistic, but it does need to be there. We need men thrive in challenge, like full fucking stop. That's one of the ways that we thrive, and we thrive really well. And so can we be more articulate with the challenge that we bring into our lives? You know, like for me personally, I do things that are uncomfortable on a regular basis, on a daily basis sometimes. And again, it's not, you know, I'm not like, oh, I'm this pen, I'm going to stab it through my hand because that's uncomfortable. No, I mean, that's ridiculous. But there are things that I know I'm going to be able to grow from and learn from. And, you know, whether it be fight training or whether it be, you know, engaging in working with a coach that I know is going to challenge me and take me to another level, right? And call out and call forward, I should say, the blind spots within me that I cannot see. That's very uncomfortable. Whether it's having that difficult conversation that's been on my heart with my wife for, you know, for a number of months, but I haven't really, or a number of weeks, and I haven't really had it because I've just been waiting for the right moment, you know, whatever it is, whatever that challenge is, you know, it could be, okay, I'm noticing I'm spending a little too much money lately. Maybe I need to pull back. Let me have a deliberate practice of no spend for a month and let me observe that. And that would be uncomfortable for me as an example, right? Because I like buying gadgets and I like creating things and then, you know, setting up systems that make my life easier and so forth. But can I just go back into simplicity? I'm not reading as much as I'd like to. Okay, I'm going to get back on that train and read a little more and be a little more structured. That's a challenge for me. So it's giving some examples of, you don't have to be jumping out of a plane to challenge yourself, right?
Yeah.
And you may need to do that. That may be your thing.
Mm-hmm. You might have fun doing it. What's your experience been of being initiated in your life? Have you been initiated? Have you had, you know, quasi-initiations?
I've had multiple initiations. So in Australia from Aboriginal people and Aboriginal culture, and that hasn't been a completely, what's the right word, genuine, authentic, or maybe traditional is the right word, because that would involve it would involve certain things that are, I don't know if I'm willing to go down. some of the old traditions are fucking intense, man, and again, grotesque for lack of a better term, right? And I see the value then, now, I don't know. I'm not against it, but just not necessarily for me. But I've been initiated in that way. I've been initiated through different men's groups. I've been on my own vision quests as well, you know, by myself, and also have been taken through vision quests. where I've been out in wilderness by myself, alone, no food, just water, for a number of days, so forth. I've had, you know, various other initiations as well as silent retreats and so forth. I've been very blessed to be surrounded by amazing people, you know, coaches and men and women that have taken me through. I mean, man, there have been a couple of different times, three different times particularly in my life where, you know, I've been suicidal and I've been, you know, on the edge for lengthened periods of time, and very blessed that I've been pulled off that ledge, and that in and of itself is an initiation, and everything that comes with that, and the process of delving deep into that space as well. But in more formal initiations, yeah, in the past with Aboriginal cultures, something that just came to mind. I've actually been through an initiation. I was quite young. I was 17. A high ordained Taoist monk came to Perth, Western Australia, and during that time, my mother arranged. I was exposed to, varied spiritual practices and methodologies and you know, ethos from a very young age. And he came, and there was a process. I don't know if I'd call it a rite of passage, but it was definitely an initiation of sorts. So is that I've been initiated in different ways in my martial arts practices as well over the years. So, you know, in various forms, depending on how you look at it, but there's more. There's always more. Yeah. I'm growing, so I'm not stagnant. I'm ever changing, so there'll be more initiations, and I can feel that call to nature and to the wild now, and by myself too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of those different pieces. I think that's probably the general experience of modern men, is that, you know, we're not initiated in one way through one culture because we're all. Mishmash for most of us are, you know, we have an eclectic mix of ethnicity in us and, you know, religion and you know, where we're located is surrounded by different ethnicities and traditions. And, you know, if I could divide up the two ways that you were initiated in various forms, it was like in one, you were initiated by life, right? Like, you know, you didn't have a choice.
Yep.
And in other ways, you choose a path that results in some kind of an initiation. You engage certain people, you're attracted to certain cultures, and you go and you spend time with them, you know, whether it's martial arts or Aboriginal people. And I've spent a fair bit of time in sweat lodges when I was back in Alberta and became familiar with those folks there and also was initiated by life. Ending up in rehab when I was 16, you know, it's not something I chose, but that became a sort of a rite of passage for me as well, like learning to take responsibility for my life and not be so arrogant as to think that I have all of the solutions, and to, you know, learn to listen and humble myself and deflate my ego. And so, I think, you know, that last piece that you spoke to was like, you know, there's more. Like, I'm always open and ready to be initiated more into life. How can I go deeper? Right. And so for men listening to this, you know, and women, you know, like where am I being called right now? You know, and what initiation might be there on the other side for me? Mm. It's a good question to ask yourself, you know, and to, you know, be quiet for a minute, ask yourself that question and see what comes up and then maybe move in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, listen to that calling.
Yeah. You know, there's a, I don't know, this may feel too simple, but a simple practice that really allows me to connect to what you're speaking to is, and, you know, put it in your calendar. If you're one of those people that has a full calendar, I myself have a fairly full calendar. It's a season of life that I'm in. I'm very aware and cognizant of it. I'm deliberate with it. Yes, it's still overwhelming. Yes, I backlash, outlash sometimes at my loved ones, my wife particularly, because I'm a little, you know, flustered or overworked or whatever it may be. But something that I do is allocating your calendar time to just sit and reflect. You can have a journal, you can have a, you know, something to write on, but if you can just position yourself where you're looking at a really vast landscape. I'm very blessed that in my backyard I have a hill country views. Austin's very, very well known for hill country and greenery and like just hilly landscape. It's really stunning. And I just look into the horizon. And you know, if you're blessed enough to live in an ocean or you have mountain views, just look and gaze and let it be transcendental and let it be meditative and let it be hypnotic. And just sit in that. And there's something special that happens if you sit in that long enough, you know, if you just stay in that, remain in that long enough. And it's super simple, yet it's always been profound. And I mean always been profound for me, always.
Real big fan of simple over here. Real big fan.
Yeah.
I've got a degree in counseling and, you know, I've geeked out on plenty of things, but yeah. I really love to simplify and see the simpler things in life and try to sift through the extra chaff, they call it, you know, it's like extra stuff and get back to what's simple. And it makes so much sense. Like what you're saying, yeah. You know, like we are nature, we are from nature.
Yeah.
And the way that we live is, we're looking down at concrete. We're looking at screens. We're looking at cars, you know, for so much of our lives. Yeah. And, you know, there's a certain type of thinking and a certain frequency that comes from all of that. But our most essential selves resides in that natural place, that nature, you know. And so if we can put ourselves there, the magic happens, right?
Yeah.
The truth comes, comes through.
Just going to show up.
Yeah. Another one that really works for me is because I have a lot of energy buzzing around in my body, my thoughts can be sort of scattered and unclear. And when I'm in conflict, that just gets worse, you know? So one of the things that I do when I'm processing something or I've had a bit of a blow up with my wife or an argument or whatever, is I go and I cook myself in the sauna, just cook myself to the point where I'm like rocking back and forth going, oh, just two more minutes, just count your breaths, you know, like that type, that level of discomfort, right? And that's a good place to be. I mean, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, like going to that uncomfortable place, you know, like this is good for my body. I'm safe. I'm okay in here. I can step out anytime. Just that sort of self-talk and self-soothing is even in the sauna, is a useful practice.
Yeah.
And then I jump in the cold tank or the cold shower and feel that relief. And it's a little bit like being on LSD when you're done that process, when you just sit down, right?
Oh, yeah.
But the clarity that comes through, once I've blasted my body with heat and then cold, my mind just comes down to this like grounded frequency, where I'm like, I know what's important. And there's been so many times where I like resolve a conflict in my mind in that moment. Cause I just like, I see my heart, I see my wife's heart. I see what both of our hearts were calling for in that moment. And I'm like, oh, okay. Here's what's unsaid. What wasn't acknowledged.
Yeah.
And what I need to say and, you know, how I need to approach this. And it just comes clear, you know, it's a very simple technique, doesn't cost any money. You've just got to take that time and that space in your life to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. 100% agreed. And what I'm hearing you say is taking responsibility, being self-reliant, being accountable for your own internal processes, you know, not, if I unpack all of that, it's not projecting onto someone else. It's not being reactive. And one of the simple tools I use every day, I move my body every day. Now, every day, if I really look back at, you know, historically, my day's gone, like it's pretty much, there'll be some level of intensity, whether it's 5 minutes or whether it's an hour or even longer, there is some level of intensity. I move my body, I train my body, I challenge my body, I lift heavy, I lift volume, I take my breath and my body to places that are very fucking uncomfortable, and there is reprieve in that and there is clarity in that. And there is openness in that. And it makes me a better person. It makes me less agitated. It gives me context into, you know, the areas of my life and the microcosms of my life that I can't see. Yet somehow I'm able to access them in that intensity when I'm flirting with the edge of disaster. And there's something really powerful about that. And the confidence that comes from that, not the arrogance, the confidence is truly profound for me personally. It's something that, you know, we're made to move. Humans are made to move, particularly men. We're made to challenge our bodies. And that's how we build our bodies. That's how we develop resiliency. It's one of the ways of many that we develop resiliency. And as you mentioned that earlier. And so I'm a big fan of that as well. big fan. I just got cold plunge delivered to my place recently. I love the cold and dislike the cold, but love the cold. And my infrared sauna there as well. And it's all sweet, man.
Yeah. Me too. Dream life, man. When you reach that level where you've got your own sauna and your own cold tank. I remember when a couple of years ago, that's sort of where we got to. And I was like, wow, I don't need anything else now in my life. Like I can get through anything with this.
Yeah.
Beautiful, man. Thank you for taking the time to have this conversation with me. I think we could probably talk for 3 hours and really just dig deeper and deeper and deeper. And
I agree.
So I think you're one of those guys that, when I want to have a longer conversation or dig into a specific topic, and you're one of those guys I'm going to reach out to, and you know, we can do something again here, do a part two.
100%.
You know, I talked about digging into you know, what's important about a person's relationship to their mother. What's important about the relationship to the father? You know, how does that affect you in adulthood? And you know, everybody's got a different story, but how do we reconcile the things that happened to us with our parents and you know, deprogram and move forward. And we didn't get into any of those specifics, and I'd love to one day. So
yeah, for sure. Let's do it.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. And it's good to get to know you. I mean, this is the first time we've met.
Yeah.
You know, I'm Ben Goreski. This is the Evolving Man podcast. It's great to meet you. And yeah, thanks for sharing your wisdom and your energy with my listeners, man.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
How can people find you? If people want to work with you, like what do you got? Where can we find you?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. And likewise, amazing being here and amazing getting to know you as well at a deeper level. And I'm sure that will continue too. You know, we move in similar circles, of course.
Yeah.
People can find me on social media at Stefanos Sefandos. My website is stefanossefandos.com. If you want to apply directly to coach with me one-on-one, I currently have a wait list, but I'm, you know, depending on where we're at, but coachwithsteph.com. Trying to think of what programs we have available at the moment. We're running an inner child workshop literally today all weekend, so that will pass. But that's an amazing workshop my wife and I run. We have a beautiful journey and program for women that's coming up. It's called Be the Queen. It'll be like our fourth or fifth time that we've run this one, and that starts in November at some point. And that's just a beautiful journey arc for women that are looking not only to find and create that love in their lives, but to also clear the clutter of the past. It's an amazing journey that my wife and I, Christine, take the ladies through. And then, you know, the amazing things here with Empowered Brotherhood, MPB movement, here in Austin, and we're branching out, you know, the men's work that we're doing. But yeah, just amazing things happening, man. Like I said, I feel really blessed, Ben. I've got amazing things going on in my life at the moment.
Yeah. Beautiful, man. You got so much going on, and there's a part of me that's jealous. You're in Austin and connected to so many of the guys that I've had my eye on, and some of our friends down there.
Yeah.
We wanted to drive down and spend some time in Austin this winter, but we're going to have to do that, maybe in a few years. Love to meet Preston and Aubert and a lot of the guys Aubert's down great. There.
So it was Preston. Yeah. So they're all part of MPB, as you know, Preston, myself and Garen Jones, we're founders of MPB, and, you know, Aubert is a very close part of us as well. He lives here, and I have a lot of, you know, reverence for Aubert, of course, and Preston and all the guys that we work with here. We're doing great work.
Yeah, right on, man. Good for you guys. Okay, brother. Thank you for taking time in the middle of your workshop to record this episode with us. And we'll get it out as soon as we can. And thanks again, brother. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, brother.